Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you one and all for being here. Wherever you are and whenever you are, because people listen to us from all over the world at times like Australia, where it's already tomorrow. And that's totally amazing. Thank you so much for hanging out with me and my guest tonight, who is Jacob Nordby, and I'm really excited to talk to him. He's doing some really cool stuff. But first, tonight's metaphysical music. And here we are in the time of Trump and alternative facts and a general sense of people not caring about each other in the same way, at least the people who are trying to run the government. I won't say they're running it because they don't seem to know what they're doing. Did I just say that, Alan? But two quotes came to mind. One is Mother Teresa said something, I'm paraphrasing, if you are unhappy, it's because you've forgotten that we belong to each other, which I think is just profound. It's like we make believe in the Western world that we're separate and we have to take care of ourselves, and it's our family and a very small circle of friends, as Phil Oakes would say, that are all that matters. And the truth is, we're in this together. We are all in this together. Everything that goes on affects all of us. And that's becoming more and more apparent as things are unfolding. The other thing is something that Ram Dass said, which is, we're all just walking each other home. We're all in this life together, and we're all going to go home. We're all going to die. And along the way, we're all just walking each other home. And we can either see everybody as being our family and someone we have to walk alongside and take care of, or we can make believe we're separate and we can take care of ourselves and none of this matters and who cares. It occurs to me sometimes that the biggest problem in Western culture is the idea of keeping score, and that the way you keep score is by how much money you make. And the people that make the most money somehow are better. And the truth is, that's absolute balderdash. It's nonsense. The people who are better are the ones that are taking care of each other, and especially the people taking care of the people who can't take care of themselves. And it seems there's a certain madness that's going on at the moment of people in high places forgetting what it is to be human. And as the saying goes, this too shall pass. But in the meantime, we've got a lot of work to do. So the underlying message today is just remember that we're in this together. Don't buy into all these fear messages and all these, it's them. They're the problem. They're dangerous. You got to do something about them. No. We have to take care of each other. It's all about love. So there you have it. And let's have some fun with tonight's guest, Jacob Nordby, who you've been around forever. I'm so glad we're getting to talk.
Thank you, David. I'm so happy to be here.
So for people that don't recognize your name, they will recognize that little poem that you wrote that's been all over the internet forever. Can you just read that paragraph for us? Because it's so beautiful.
Sure.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, it's right here. It says, blessed are the weird people, the poets, misfits, writers, mystics, heretics, painters, and troubadours, for they teach us to see the world through different eyes.
Absolutely true, and I seem to be a little bit of all of those. So
yeah.
So we're going to talk about your book, which is a wonderful book, but as I ask all my guests, how did your life unfold that you're doing what you're doing and writing these books and bringing this message to the world?
Well, it's interesting. Your musings there at the start of the show, David, was so appropriate. It's funny. I started calling people fellow travelers a few years ago, and I didn't realize there was a movement, at some other time when people were in other political circumstances where they called each other fellow travelers as well. I was not even aware of that, but I really do see it that way. That we're all walking each other home. We're fellow travelers. But in 2007, I was 34 years old, and I was 240 pounds. I was stressed out. I had a big, beautiful office. Had started three companies with my brothers. Had a big, beautiful house. Had hundreds and hundreds of people in the business community who thought I was pretty cool. Inwardly, I was a complete wreck, and had grown up in a fundamentalist Christian cult as a child, had broken away from that, but didn't really have an internal spiritual home, and was looking. I was starting to read books by Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and Ram Dass and all these different ones, but still didn't have a direction, a sense of home yet. And a young guy came and worked for me that year, 2007. And he said, why don't you come up to this meditation retreat up to this mountain town of McCall, which is a couple hours north of where I live here in Boise, Idaho. And I said, well, sure. I hadn't really learned to meditate at that point. And I didn't know why, but something inside it said yes. And also there was this deep fear that gripped me. I went a couple months later, I went to this retreat, I rode with him. So I couldn't escape. There was no turning back. And I got there, Dave, and it turned out to be a shamanic retreat. And it was, the shaman, I didn't even know what a shaman was at the time. Shaman showed up and, administered the most powerful medicine experience known to man. And I had never even been high before or anything. So it was like jumping out of a fighter jet blindfolded. But it changed everything. It put a lens on my life like I had never had before. It broke me wide open and allowed me to experience the universe and love and whatever we call God without all the filters and without all the guilt and fear and doubts and things that I've been raised with. And I went back to my life after that and didn't know what to do next, because I had had a glimpse, and not just an idea, not just a book, something in a book, but I had a full body, full mind, full psyche experience that I could never see the world the same way again. I didn't immediately put everything down, but within the next year or so, the financial crisis hit and everything just broke and fell apart. And it was both terrible, and it was also the most liberating gift I'd ever had to lose everything. Right. And so I moved to Austin, Texas and spent a few years there just completely without identity. Then I wrote my first book there and was able to really listen to the call of soul for the first time in my life. And since then, returned to Boise, Idaho, and now I work in publishing and write books and things. But that one experience was the watershed moment of my life at that point.
Yeah, it'll do it to you. Yeah. I spent 3 years with two healers. One was a Cherokee medicine man, and he would just drop me in the middle of something on a reservation and say, I'll see you tomorrow or what. Okay. What's this one going to be?
Yeah.
But it's all about that personal experience, and it's all about once you've had that personal experience, beliefs are irrelevant.
Yeah.
And that's really hard to explain to believers in quotation marks.
Mm-hmm.
Because all belief is hearsay.
Yeah.
You know, somebody, either the book said it or somebody you trust said it, and they say it over and over again. But it's not about a personal experience. When you have a personal experience, then you don't need an external authority. Your experience is your authority.
Yeah. 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 That's a fascinating, switch in. It's like watching the river of mind turn and go the opposite direction of the way it's been going for an entire life.
Right. Right. That's like, you know, people say, do you believe in ghosts? I go, no. I don't believe in ghosts. I've had experiences of ghosts. Mm-hmm. But no, I don't believe in them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've got two books out at the moment?
Yeah, the first I wrote and published in 2012 is called The Divine Arsonist, A Tale of Awakening. And it's a fictionalized account of what I went through back there. And then this most recent one, it was actually 2012 was the year that I was driving somewhere, David, and that little Blessed Out of the Weird piece came through, and I pulled over and wrote it down. Didn't know at the time even, you know, what all those words, I mean, I knew what they meant, but I wasn't sure why they showed up in that order and with those particular, like, troubadours or whatever. I don't know. They needed to be there. But I wrote it, you know, what's interesting is I wrote it for myself. I didn't expect, I had written a lot of other things and shared them, and none of the other things had ever really taken off. And so I didn't write it for the world. In fact, I remember putting it out there going, wow, I don't know, this seems really strange. And then when it started to take off, it surprised me, and it still does surprise me, you know?
Yeah. That I've talked to a number of people where that happened. They totally didn't expect, that this little thing that they had and put out there was going to make that big a difference, get that much attention.
Yeah.
So, but that led to the book. So, which is a fascinating thing all to itself. Tell us about the book.
Well, somebody asked me a year or so ago, you know, how do you create a movement? And I had this visceral reaction. I said, you don't create a movement. You don't try to make something go viral. You know, I move in the direction of what is true, of some true desire, and the energy of my motion towards something true becomes attractive. And I can't do it in a calculated way, saying I'm going to get other people to follow in this direction. I have to move that direction. And then if others, you know, feel the energy of that and are magnetically attracted to it, then it becomes a movement. But I can't sit down and map out on paper, okay, this is what I'm going to do to create this movement at all. I think that's contrived. So that's what happened with this situation here, David, was, you know, I wrote this little thing and shared it. It came from the deepest place of my soul. And it was really about myself, because I had always felt like this sort of an outsider pressing my nose against the glass and looking at the rest of the world as it appeared to me, you know, inside, enjoying, you know, the way they could handle it. I always felt like this sort of naive outsider. And so when I shared that little piece, I was surprised to discover how many others like me there are in the world. And I mean, of course, immediately I started to feel less alone, but then they wouldn't leave me alone. You know, I started this little Facebook page and I, many times I, you know, I just started posting whatever the hell I wanted to on there. I wasn't very calculated or careful with it. For a year or so, I wouldn't really do much with it, but then somebody would come back and say, you know, hey, did you know that the artist Prince just shared your Blessed of the Weird thing? Or they, you know, whoever, they would come back and say, and, you know, I kept getting these, hey, you can't, this isn't yours. You don't get to not pay attention to it. And so I began writing that, the book in 2013, I think, and it's taken me all this time to finish it. And I think I wrote it six times, because I didn't feel I wanted to feel the raw heartthrob, in it. And by the time I was finished with it, I wasn't 100% sure that there was much left for the world to, you know, to enjoy about it. But, you know, it's really the distillation, David, of all of these downloads, all of these, insights that I had that came to me, and I didn't know how to articulate. But it, you know, what you were talking about at the beginning of the show, this tremendous sense that it is time for us to take action in a different way, like the old ways of simply grabbing the nearest weapon and going and, you know, forcing our ideas on people. Somehow that's no longer going to work. You know, even though we keep as humanity, we keep falling back on that, but truly that's not the answer. Somehow we need to transcend the ancient limbic system, fight or flight, and move into this, you know, the rest of our birthright, which is creative powerhouses to come up with really change the dream of the world, the collective dream. And I don't believe in trying to go out and change the world. I believe in changing my world and taking care of what's within my own arm's reach. I feel like that's the only way possible to affect any kind of real change.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. And as you change, what's around you changes. And as the way you see the world from inside your little bubble of who you are, as that changes, what you see in the external world changes.
Yeah.
Which is really fun.
Well, agreed. And we are, I mean, as you were saying, we are all connected, and that's not a lofty, you know, metaphysical theory. Like the more science delves into this question, the more true scientists sound like mystics. I mean, they They begin to sound like Rumi and the Sufi poets. I mean, you hear quantum scientists, you know, beginning to say, "Look, I've discovered that we are deeply connected at levels that I can't even begin to describe." That to me is exciting, because it's no longer simply the realm of people like me and sounds like you, David, you know, who have had a unitive experience. As Maslow would call it. Now science and the mystical have begun to meet out there somewhere. And I'm deeply encouraged by that.
Yeah. when you start listening to people who really understand physics and not just the Newtonian physics that allow you to move objects and predict the weather kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Because there's no physical, really no physical stuff in the universe. It's all energy.
Yeah.
It's all an interconnected network of energy.
And that sounds so high minded, but the, you know, I talked to, Fred Wolf, the physicist on What the Bleep Do We Know. I had a chance to meet him, and he was trying to describe that, and he was quarks and semi-quarks and all that, and he finally said, people, if you could understand from a physicist standpoint the amount of focus and concentration it takes to turn pure energy into matter. He said that, "I want you to walk out of this place tonight and realize the pavement you are walking on is holy ground." He said, "This place is made of love." He said, I don't even know how to, you know, as a physicist, as a scientist, I don't know how to make that work, but that's the only way I know how to boil it all down, is this place you're walking on is made of love. This is holy ground.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's all intention. And the question is who or what it has that intention, but
right.
Well, there's an often quoted thing from the Talmud that says, "For every blade of grass, there is an angel whispering, 'Grow, grow.'"
Yes, I love that.
There is a consciousness that takes care of every individual thing down to the smallest level, with an intention of grow, live, love. Yeah. Yes, do this.
Yeah, expand. Yeah. Well, David, I feel strongly that we're in a period of time. This is a new renaissance on Earth, and renaissances come at high points of human consciousness, of evolution, They come loaded. So you and I were born into this era. Doesn't matter whether we like it or not, and whether we wake up to it or not. The point is, everybody here is at a high point of human consciousness, and they come freighted with opportunity, and they also come freighted with danger, because every high watermark is followed by a low watermark, generally speaking. I feel like we are handed the opportunity right now, in humanity as a whole, is to do something different than has been done before. And one of Carl Jung's patients once asked him, "Dr. Jung, can the world escape an apocalypse?" And he pondered for a moment, and he said, "Yes, if enough people will do their inner work." And I feel like that's where we are right now, is if enough of the particles, if enough of the water molecules in a wave can wake up to themselves and not try to change the wave, not try to change the momentum, not anything like that, just wake up to who we really are, who I really am in this wave at this moment with this potential energy, and say, this is who I am, and this is the potential I have to, you know, navigate these times with joy and grace and power, or I can stay asleep and navigate these times with unconsciousness, which means I'll probably crash into a tree.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
And, you know, any transition period, we're in a period between 2,000 years of darkness and something that's coming that is so wonderful we can't even imagine it. But in between, there is always a transition period of chaos. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're in the middle of. And the greater the chaos, the greater the change that's coming. So all this is supposed to be a good sign. mm-hmm. Or at least that's what they tell me.
That's what they tell us, yeah.
Right, right. But we have to get through this period of chaos to get to the other side of it. Mm-hmm. And here we are. So, but what's the line, you know, clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right.
Yes, indeed.
And it certainly seems like they're all showing up at the moment. Jacob, let's make sure that people know the name of the book and where they can find you online.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. So the book is titled Blessed Are the Weird, A Manifesto for Creatives. And, you know, I love sending people to blessedweirdbook.com, blessedweirdbook.com. I send them there because that's a page that specifically allows people to download the introduction and the first two chapters of the book for free. And then they can find, you know, the rest of the website and all that stuff from there. But that's a nice place for them to go and be able to sample this thing a little bit.
Excellent. And you have your own personal page with more of what you do, right?
Yeah, they from there they can navigate, you know, out to the
it's all there on the
page. BlessedAreTheWeird.com, yeah, is the larger page. But yeah, and they can also find me on Facebook at Facebook page is called Blessed Are the Weird, and yeah, there's 72,000 other weird people out in the world and growing.
Yes, there are lots of weird people. And hopefully we all find each other so we don't feel alone, because there are
all the people
who think they understand what's going on and that we're weird, are very busy telling us that we're weird.
Well, yeah, and David, you know, I know we're about down to the end of our time together, but I would just want to say that one of the most critical things, one of the most critical challenges of our time is to redefine the meaning of success for ourselves individually, for myself, and also reclaim the ancient meanings of the word weird, which when you go back in history, and the book talks about this, the word weird had ancient roots that had to do with destiny and fate. And so
We can pick that up when we come back from the break, because we're not at the end of our time, which is wonderful.
Good.
Yeah.
My voice just cracked.
We're just taking a break. Okay. So We will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. My guest tonight is Jacob Nordby, and this is the Farkas Files on Empower Radio, and we will be back. So don't go nowhere. We're going to have a lot more fun.
The Empower Meditation Channel. Non-stop meditation music 24 hours a day in the new Empower Radio app. Music to empower your meditation, help you relax, sleep, or provide a calm background while you work. The Empower Meditation Channel is interruption-free. Listen now with the Empower Radio app, free in the App Store, or listen online at empower.fm. Soothe your soul. Calm your mind. The Empower Meditation Channel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Katie Couric. You know, girls who grow up with confidence are more likely to reach their full potential. I've interviewed world leaders, CEOs, and celebrities, but my most important role has been as a mom to my two daughters, Ellie and Carrie. I've worked hard to encourage my girls to see the world as a place of endless possibilities. They know that believing in themselves will give them the confidence they need to persevere. Research has shown that girls with high self-esteem are better prepared to navigate life's challenges, not only in their teenage years, but well beyond. So join me as we empower the next generation. Together, we can help today's girls achieve their dreams tomorrow.
This message was brought to you by the Alliance for Women in Media and made possible through the support of Dove and the Dove Self-Esteem Fund, working together to help girls reach their full potential. To learn more, go to dove.com.
Great party, huh, guys?
Yeah, it is. So much fun.
Uh-huh. I do say so myself. Hey, did you know that birthday parties actually help build confidence in kids?
Yeah, I did know that.
Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Right, of course.
Yeah, I knew that. Did you know that strollers have the right of way on sidewalks?
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, that's true. Did you know that friendly kids statistically have more friends?
Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah?
It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, so obvious.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
I think I knew that.
No, you didn't.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Me, a cat, moving in with a new human. It took a little getting used to. She has these weird games she likes to play, like this giant feather. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. It's almost like she thinks I enjoy it. But seeing how much fun she gets out of it, well, I guess it makes it all worth it. Humans.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Adding light to the world, one heart at a time. This is Empower Radio.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back. Speaking of voices cracking, my guest tonight is Jacob Nordby. And we're talking about his book about weird. And oh, I certainly fit that. So came to the right place. So you were talking about the derivation and history of the word weird, which I found totally fascinating. Let's get more about that.
Well, yeah, David, you know, it's funny when I first posted that, you know, bless her, the weird thing, and then it started taking off. I became known on Facebook or whatever as the weird guy, which I didn't particularly like. Not that I minded being called weird, but people would come and post any pot, you know, they'd post pictures of people making goofy faces or, you know, whatever, anything that they thought weird. And they thought that I would be delighted with it. And I wasn't delighted with it. Because to me, what was coming through for me was that this, you know, this sense of weird, it's much deeper. It's not this contrived, hey, look at me, look how weird I am. It really goes much deeper into a sense of destiny. And, like, most of us who have these characteristics wouldn't have necessarily chosen that. It's kind of like the painful gift of not fitting in, you know, like why would we choose that?
Right.
You know, and I've also had people try to water it down by saying, well, everybody's weird, so everybody's normal. I'm like, no. You've missed the point altogether. Neither thing is true. The blessed weird, it goes much deeper And this isn't some, you know, hierarchy trying to establish, okay, you know, let's separate a group of people out and say they're better than anyone else or anything like that. Definitely not that. But this sense of being chosen to carry something beautiful into the world, like people who had what we would call mental illness nowadays, autism and other kinds of, you know, anomalies in old tribes, David, were often, you know, honored as being touched by the gods in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were cherished and cared for because the more primitive peoples, really believed that they had something special to share with the rest of the tribe. And again, not that all weird people have, you know, anomalous mental faculties or anything like that, but there is this sense of being sort of set apart. And so I don't want anyone to water down the idea here by saying, yeah, you know, everybody's got their little quirks. So that means we're all weird, yada, yada, yada. No, that's not what I'm talking about here. No, the word weird used to be spelled W-Y-R-D, and it went back into ancient Germanic and Norse times, you know, and it wasn't until Shakespeare's day that they actually changed the word weird to mean something strange or off-putting. In fact, he was the one who used it in that sense. And then it began to change and evolve into now we say weird about anything that's sort of just, you know, okay, that's weird. And what I feel like it's time to do is to reclaim the ancient sense of the word and redefine what that means, for myself, for everyone who has that sense in them, because it's something very precious.
Yeah, it's, it's one of those aspects to all kinds of things that have just become cloaked in darkness, mostly because of things having to do with heresy. If you're different, then you're not following the rules, you're not following church teachings, you're doing things which they judge as being bad and wrong.
Yeah.
And that's a dangerous thing to do, depending on when in history you happen to be doing it. And so, you know, I often say I'm a born again heretic.
Right.
There's pretty much no teaching that I don't have something to say about. But, you know, that's most people are trying to fit in and to be good in whatever definition of good has been given to them. And as soon as you're outside of that, at the very least, it's strange and a little bit scary.
Yes.
Don't know what to make of it. And I think that's what it's taken on. The other thing is that whole connection between seeing things differently and mental illness has been around for a long time. And you know, I got to see up close and personal that phenomenon that you were talking about. I worked nights in a psych hospital for a while.
Oh, wow.
And there were a couple of old ladies who talked to their voices all day. You know, they just had conversations with one, two, or three voices, and everybody just laughed at them, and, you know, that was their psychosis. I could see who they were talking to.
Wow, yeah.
And So in another culture earlier in their lives, when it was obvious that they were mediums, somebody would have scooped them up and taken them to the wise woman or the shaman or whoever it was that knew about such things, and they would have been honored and trained and been an asset to the tribe.
Yes.
But instead, when they became too eccentric to handle life on their own, they wound up in a psych hospital.
Well, yeah. And David, that's where I feel like we are, you know, we so deeply married the Cartesian method. You know, Descartes, the father of modern science, I don't look at it and say humanity did a bad thing. In many ways, we needed to jettison a lot of the superstitious beliefs that had kept humanity enshrouded in darkness for, you know, so many centuries. So, but in a certain way, what happened is there's the split and the westward movement and the development of the industrial age and all these things. We began to marry so deeply and worship so deeply the product and the fruits of the rational linear mind that we cut off a great part of our psyche, which is the symbolic and the intuitive and the non-rational. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we began to value increasingly less value on people or ideas that couldn't be fit into, okay, this is how it's going to work on the assembly line or in the laboratory. And I feel strongly that right now, we're in a time of trying to reclaim that part of ourselves that we've largely, in the, you know, developed world, we've largely orphaned parts of our psyche that we're trying to get back, the symbolic, the ritualistic. We crave meaningful ritual. We crave ceremony. We don't know why. Like you, what you just said about, you know, various belief systems and things, I don't want to go back to, you know, old heavy doctrines and dogmas and things like that. But we don't have to, is the point. This whole exploration of the symbolic and the intuitive and the powerful and the magical, I mean, these things are real. They're every bit as real as the linear side. It's just learning to walk that line, and that's not something most people care to do, because it's a hard walk to undertake.
Well, there's a lot of fear in there as well, because that whole heresy aspect of it, there was literally a deal cut between the nascent study of science, and the early scientists were considered heretics and all kinds of terrible things were done to them. And they eventually cut a deal with the church, which was, you can do all of this stuff that has to do with the physical world, but don't ever cross the line into our realm.
Mm-hmm.
And the spiritual stuff and all of that is ours. You can't do it. And it's got to the point where the scientists defended it.
Yes.
Where the split came from both sides. And now anything that's intuitive, you know, there are now scientists who are including it, because obviously physics is basically turning it to a spiritual practice.
Exactly. Yeah.
But for all these hundreds of years, it was dangerous to cross that line.
Yeah.
Because in the past, it had been something that could get you killed. And
yeah.
So it's interesting to watch things start to integrate, as you were talking about before, and be able to talk about all of it. And how interesting that we have the Pope that we have at the moment.
Yes.
Who looks at and talks about things in a totally different way than is typical of the historic positions of the church. So it's even that is an interesting time.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean, David, by saying this is the new Renaissance. I mean, we're in a time where the rules simply don't apply. And by the way, in your lifetime, in my lifetime, and probably many of the listeners, we have absorbed more change in a single lifetime than a human organism might experience in the course of 200 or 300 years. We've had to absorb that in our psyches, in our bodies, in our emotional bodies. We've had to absorb that, and so you know, generations would pass, and they wouldn't experience as much change as you and I have experienced in a single lifetime. And what people don't realize is that creates, and many people don't, is that it creates a latent sense of anxiety that's almost overwhelming at times, but it's hard to put a finger on.
Right.
Whereas before, there were these big posts called government and church and business, and there was the fourth estate called the media, you know, and for the last few hundred years, those things were very important. They kept the fabric of life together, intact, and they made things understandable. Well, right now, think about right now how little trust almost anyone places in any of those four pillars.
Right.
And so the sense of being at sea is so great that many, many people just don't know how to handle the tremendous tsunami of anxiety that is just washing around all of us all of the time. No wonder the world starts to go crazy sometimes.
Absolutely. I actually thought about it with my father's generation, in some ways even more than my generation, because when he was a kid, as an immigrant kid in New York City, it was push carts and horse-drawn wagons, gas lights, ice boxes. There was no refrigeration yet. People delivered ice. It was, and to go from that to cars and fast trains and airplanes being a standard way to get around, radio was brand new, and then TV. And, you know, before he died, he was working on computers.
Isn't that amazing?
So it's, you know, that is an extraordinary amount of change from horses to airplanes, minimal electricity to everything electronic. We've watched that grow, many times over, but that generation from the turn of the 20th century, that 100 years was just extraordinary.
Extraordinary. And you know, what's interesting, I mean, inside of our lifetimes, I think one of the greater changes has been, I mean, obviously the internet is the facilitator for all of this, but the idea that we are all connected is no longer a theory. It's right in front of our faces. I mean, you and I have never met in person, but because of, you know, this strange web of connections, we come into contact and, you know, here we are talking and I feel like I know you, and that's a positive outcome of this thing. But the fact is, many people, we've never been more connected, at a superficial level, but the fact is more and more people are feeling tremendously isolated by the very things that we have created to create, you know, to allow more connection. And so that's what I'm feeling right now, David, is not that we should become Luddites and try to roll back technology, but to take back the power from the machine that we've created, become responsible for it, and to say, this is how much I'm going to allow things into my life in this way, and then go and make real connection with people right in my own hometown. Like, go spend time with real people, because the sense of being isolated, that's where fear and dread, and that's where the lack of optimism. When I go to a small community gathering, and you know, there's music and there's food and there's people laughing together and talking together, or there's even people talking about difficult situations together, I leave there and my sense of optimism grows after that. I'm not isolated in my little house, you know, hearing all these bad stories, all that's going on. I'm actually able to look in others' eyes, and I feel like in that way, you know, the old-fashioned, let's go and actually touch each other's skin and say hello to each other and look each other in the eye. I feel like that's one of the antidotes to some of the despair of what's going on right now.
Right, absolutely. And there's so much fear that people tend to limit their social interactions and where they go and all of that stuff. Yeah, sometimes when someone asks, what do? I say, I'm a hermit.
Sure.
You know, high tech hermit, that's, you know, and I think there are a lot of us, you know, I'm very fortunate to, you know, live in a house built in 1870, that's in an incredible, beautiful, bucolic area. And, you know, it's not like I'm sitting in an apartment somewhere, but still.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, it's, I think that's true for more and more people, either because they're busy or because it just doesn't seem worth it to do, what you would have to do to make the social connections. Seems risky.
Well, right. And this is where I feel like more than ever before, we need each other. Like, we've always needed each other, but technology and the abundance of the first world and the logistical systems that allow food supply and all that stuff to happen largely, you know, sort of behind the scenes. So I drive to the store and get stuff and go home. You know, I don't really participate in the making of, you know, growing the food or taking care of the animals or anything like that anymore. I did as a child. But most people, there have been a couple of generations now, David, where the majority of people haven't looked in the eyes of the creatures they were raising to eventually become food or haven't right. cared for the garden. You know, I was fortunate in the isolated circumstances I had as a child, or the sheltered, I should say, you know, to have some of those experiences. So I kind of had a greater connection to the earth and to the rhythms and all that sort of thing. But I see, you know, even my own children, and my own generation, I was kind of a weird one in my own generation. You know, there's just not a good sense. There's a disassociation from the natural rhythms. And I feel like that's one thing we're being called back into for those of us who can and will, even if it's a small thing, even if it's going out on the back patio and planting a tomato plant, you know, just one plant in a little pot and caring for it all spring and summer, and then eating a fresh tomato that I raised on my back patio. That by itself is symbolically very important, because it actually reminds me that I'm part of this larger system and that right. I'm not disconnected. Right.
Right. Yeah. It's really fascinating, even in rural farming areas with monocrops and all the rest of it. I don't think people get the idea of what it is to have a real garden. Yeah. And I have friends that have that, you know, that basically have a mini farm in their backyard. Mm-hmm. That they're few and far between.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm not a critic, by the way. I'm not a critic of the fruits of technology or the fruits of what we've created. We've all done this together. We've all done this together for many, many centuries, and we were trying to create our way out of being at the mercy of nature. Well, we've largely done that. But now what we've created in the process, we've created this machine that, rather than setting us free, we are more and more enslaved to our own success, to our own machine. And the good news is, all it requires now is becoming responsible. You know, I feel like if everyone in the first world read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning right now, we'd have a revival of personal responsibility. We'd have people saying, you know what, I'm not going to spend as much time, you know, devouring news from social media or from television or whatever. I'm going to spend more time in real connection with my family, my children. I'm going to actually create. I'm going to play music. I'm going to do the things that are important to me. Because the point is, David, we've created a situation where we don't have to work truly. We don't have to work that hard to survive anymore. And that's one. Right. This is one of the first times in human history where we have that situation where it's really not that hard to survive for most of us. Truly.
Well. Because other people are invisibly doing the work.
Right.
But yes, absolutely. The other thing is, we live in a culture that in which people are self-medicating with drugs and alcohol and all kinds of other things constantly. So yep. Saying that people are spending time together, if you're spending time together drinking, you're not really together. If you're spending time together, and I know this is going to offend some people, but if you're spending your time watching sports, drinking beer, or playing video games, it's not an interaction in which you are consciously present. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what passes for sociability these days are built around those kinds of rituals. Mm-hmm. You know, what used to be a meal and a fire and music and storytelling and that kind of stuff has become sitting, looking at our phones and looking at the TV or that kind of thing while taking something to take the edge off. I've been very fortunate that I am so sensitive to all of those things that take the edge off that I can't take them anyway. So,
Well, and David, you know, one thing I think is important, at least in this, I'm speaking for myself now, I've never wanted to come across as a scold or, you know, kind of the Ralph Nader, shake my finger in your face right. saying, you know, you dirty little first world person. No, guys, we've all done this together. We were working hard to create more comfort and more predictability for ourselves. You know, so it's not, we haven't done a bad thing. It's just now there's too much of a good thing. So let's just find some moderation and let's find out what, you know, people have asked me, you know, so what's the solution for our problems today? You know, this world's in such a mess. And I'm like, well, the world's always been in a mess. I mean, it's just always been a mess. So, I mean, first of all, let's get some perspective on it. And secondly, I feel like the solution is it always comes down to a question. You know, and in fact, if I have any responsibility these days, David, when it comes to, you know, what do I do socially or what, you know, what do we do politically? I feel like my personal responsibility is to learn how to ask questions. And the questions are, what makes me human?
Mm.
What do I love? What will I never give up? What requires me to say no? What am I willing to die and live passionately for? And then what shall I do? You know, that yields then the fruit of right action, you know, which is the Buddhist principle. I mean, so when it, I mean, I hesitate to ever want to run out with here's the solution to all our problems. I feel like the solution is questions, honest questions.
Right. Perfect thing to wrap this up with. I want to make sure again that people know the name of the book and where to find you.
Yeah, so the name of the book is Blessed Are the Weird, a manifesto for creatives. You can go to blessedaretheweird.com. If you want to just download an excerpt of it real quick, you can go to blessedweirdbook.com. And David, I've known about you for years through the Empower Network. I love what you're doing. I didn't have a chance to, you know, connect with you in this way before, so I'm really grateful that you made this opportunity to have this conversation. I want to get to know more about you.
We can talk more, and you can also stay on after we go off the air. We can take a few minutes. But yeah, same thing. I've heard your name and seen you around forever, and I'm very glad that we're getting to get to know each other, even though you're in Boise, Idaho, and I'm in Massachusetts. how wonderful right. is it that we can do that now? So it's a wonderful thing. So, again, thank you so much for being on the show. My guest tonight has been Jacob Nordby. And you got the information about the Weird Book. And thank you so much for being with us. And if, by chance, you got curious about who is this guy David and what in the world does he do, you can find out at househealing.com. And there's every kind of technology to get in touch with me, including a link to schedule a free 20-minute phone conversation to do an assessment of a person, place, situation, business, whatever it happens to be, and see if my work might be helpful to you. If you want more information about the show, we've been doing this now for 6 years, I think, almost, 5.5. So there are hundreds of shows in the archive, and you can find those at thefarkasfiles.com. You can also access all of it from the Empower Radio app, which you can get for either flavor of phone or tablet, and also on pretty much every streaming media outlet, iTunes, podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. If you just plug in Empower Radio or Farkas Files, and we're everywhere. So, you know, I know people are listening to us all over the world at whatever time is convenient for you. And it's a fantastic thing that has become so much better than it was just a year ago, even. It's an amazing change. So I'm always excited that you spend a little time with me. Every once in a while, someone gets in touch and says, I listen to you all the time. I'm like, you know, who knew? I'm just sitting here doing what I do. And I'm very, very glad that you get to hang out with me and you get something from this. So until next week, thank you one and all for being with me. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.